What?
Barbie? Speak!
Sitting again, the dog lifted her head, obligingly sent out two cheerful barks.
She does tricks.
She barks, Eli. I actually got the idea thinking about how Stoney's dog barked when we walked him home. Someone's been getting into the house, past your high-tech alarm. So go low-tech. Barking dogs deter break-ins. You can Google it.
You think I should foster a dog because she barks on command?
She barks when she hears anyone coming to the door and stops barking on command. It's in her bio.
Her bio?
Are you kidding me? I'm not.
Most dogs bark, he argued. With or without bios and headshots or whatever else she has, it's not a qualified reason to foster a dog.
I think you could try fostering each other for now.
Because she barks and needs a home in Whiskey Beach, and you'd be company for each other.
Dogs need to be fed and watered and walked. They need a vet, equipment, attention.
All true.
She comes with bowls, food, toys, her leash, her medical records. She's up to date there. She was raised from a pup by a man in his 80s, and she's very well behaved, as you can see for yourself. The thing is, she really loves men, is happier around men as she bonded with one as a pup. She loves playing fetch and tug. She's great with kids, and she barks. If you needed or wanted to go out for a couple hours, someone would be in the house.
She's not someone. She's a dog.
Hence the barking. Listen, why don't you try it for a few days, see how it goes? If it just doesn't work, I'll take her.
Or I'll talk Maureen into taking her. She's a soft touch.
The dog sat like a lady, watching him with big brown eyes, her head slightly cocked, as if asking,
Okay, what's it going to be?
And Eli felt himself sinking.
Well, a guy shouldn't have a dog named Barbie.
Victory,
Abra concluded, and stepped to him.
No one will hold that against you.
Barbie nuzzled her nose at his hand,
politely.
Sinking fast. A couple of days.
Fair enough. I'll go out and get her things. I thought I'd start upstairs today, work my way down. I won't vacuum up there until you take another break.
Fine. You know this was an ambush, and you know I know you know.
I do.
She took his face in her hands.
It was, and I do know.
She laid her lips on his, soft and lingering.
I'll have to find a way to make it up to you.
That's pandering.
It is!
She laughed and kissed him again.
Now I have to make it up to you twice. Go on back up to work,
she suggested as she started out.
I'll show Barbie around.
Eli studied the dog. The dog studied Eli. Then she lifted a paw in invitation. Only a heartless man would have refused to take the offered paw in his for a shake. It looks like I've got a dog named Barbie. For a couple days. When he started out, Barbie fell in at his heel, tail wagging enthusiastically. I guess you're coming with me. She followed him up into his office. When he sat, she moved up to sniff at his keyboard. Then she wandered off, her toenails clicking lightly on the hardwood.
Okay, Eli thought. So she wasn't pushy. A point for Barbie.
He worked through the morning, then sat back, held an internal debate before taking the plunge. He emailed his agent, a woman who'd stuck with him since his law school days, to tell her he thought he had enough for her to take a look. Struggling to ignore all the whining voices in his head, he attached the first 5 chapters. Hit send.
Done it now,
he said and sighed. And since he had, he wanted to get out of the house, away from those whining voices. He stood up and nearly tripped over the dog. Sometime during the last couple of hours, she'd come in, silent as a ghost, to curl up behind his chair. Now she lifted her gaze to his, bumped her tail politely on the floor.
I guess you're a pretty good dog.
The tail picked up its beat.
Wanna go for a walk on the beach?
He didn't know the key word, or if she just understood whole sentences, but she scrambled to her feet, a gleaming joy in her eyes. It wasn't just her tail wagging now, but her whole body. I'll take that as a yes. She trotted downstairs with him, gave another wiggle when he picked up the leash Abra had left on the counter, then added a happy yip when they stepped into the laundry room where Abra was unloading the dryer.
"Hey there, how's it going?"
Abra set the laundry in the basket to give Barbie a rub.
"Good day so far?"
"I was going to take a walk. She opted to come." He pulled the jacket off the peg. "Why don't you?"
"I'd love it, but I'm on a schedule today."
"Your boss says you can take a break." She laughed at him.
"Aha! I'm my own boss. You just pay me. Go, bond with Barbie. You can have some lunch when you get back. Oh, take this!"
She plucked a red ball out of a basket of dog toys on the washing machine.
"She likes to fetch."
Right. She was right, too, about being her own boss, he thought. He liked and admired that about her, her ability to find and do work that satisfied her on so many levels. Once he thought he'd found that with the law, and his writing served as a kind of creative perk. Now he was all in, and his life, on so many levels, depended on the reaction of a woman in New York with a colorful collection of cheaters, a broad Brooklyn accent, and a sharply critical eye. "Not going to think about it," he told himself as he led Barbie down the beach steps. And because he couldn't stop thinking about it as they walked, as the dog trotted and wiggled with joy, he stopped and scanned the beach. Technically, she should stay on the leash, but hell, nobody, or hardly anybody, was out there. He unclipped her, pulled the ball out of his pocket, and winged it. She charged, sand kicking, legs blurring. She clamped the ball in her teeth, raced back to him, and dropped it at his feet. He winged it again, and again, lost count of the number of times. When he timed it right, she was fast and accurate enough to leap, snatch the ball out of the air. And each time she did, trotted back to drop it at his feet. They just grinned at each other. She didn't chase the birds, thankfully, though she did give them longing looks. He argued with himself, but curiosity and the little boy inside him won. He hurled the ball over the water to see how she'd react. She gave a bark of sheer, unmistakable delight and roared into the sea. She swam like, well, a retriever, he decided, laughing all the way down in his gut until he had to brace his hands on his thighs. She swam back to shore, red ball in her teeth, wild happiness beaming from her big brown eyes. She dropped the ball at his feet again, shook herself, soaked him. What the hell? He threw it out over the water again. He stayed out longer than he'd planned, and his pitching arm felt like overcooked spaghetti. But man and dog were relaxed and pleased with themselves when they walked back into Bluff House. On the kitchen island sat a clear-wrapped plate holding a cold-cut sandwich on a long roll, two pickle spears, and a scoop of pasta salad. Beside it lay a milk bone. The sticky note read,
"Guess which is whose."
Funny. "I guess we eat." He picked up the dog biscuit. The minute she spotted it, Barbie dropped her butt to the floor while the look in her eyes went slightly crazed, like a crack addict, he thought, about to take the pipe. "Damn it, Barbie. You're a good dog." He went out on the deck and ate lunch in the sun, with the dog sprawled contentedly by his chair. His life, he decided, if you didn't count murder, break-ins, and clouds of suspicion, was pretty damn good right at the moment. When he went back upstairs, he heard Abra singing. He poked his head into his bedroom first, and since the dog walked right in to explore, went over to see what towel art she'd left on the bed. Unmistakably a dog, he thought. Especially since she'd fashioned a heart out of a post-it. On it, she'd written,
"Barbie loves Eli."
He glanced over, saw Abra had brought up a wide brown cushion. It sat on the floor near the terrace doors. Obviously, the way the dog snuggled into it, it had served as her bed before.
Yeah, sure. Make yourself at home.
He left the dog to follow the singing.
In his grandmother's bedroom, she had the terrace doors opened wide, though it was a bit cool yet. He saw the duvet clothespinned to some sort of portable pole flapping in the breeze. And though Hester wasn't there, a little vase of wild violets stood on the nightstand. A small thing, Eli thought. Abra was good at small things that made big differences.
Hi, how was your walk?
She picked up a pillow, shook it out of its case. Nice, the dog likes to swim. She'd noticed, as she'd watched them from the terrace, and as she'd watched, her heart had simply glowed and melted.
It's a perk for being right on the beach.
Yeah, she's in on her bed, taking a nap.
Swimming wears you out?
Yeah, he said again as he skirted the bed to her side. What are you doing?
I thought since your family's coming, I'd air out the linens so they'll be nice and fresh.
Good thinking. They look nice and fresh already.
He backed her up until she fell on the bed under him.
Eli, my schedule.
You're your own boss, he reminded her. You can adjust the schedule.
She accepted defeat when his hands and mouth got busy, but tried a token protest.
I could. Should I?
He lifted his head briefly to pull off her tank.
I'm keeping the dog, no less of an ambush, he said when her eyes lit up. So you still have to make it up to me.
Oh, when you put it that way.
Rearing up, she tugged off his shirt.
Somebody's been working out.
She trailed her tongue over his chest.
Oh, some.
And eating his protein.
She wrapped her legs around his waist, stretched up, canted forward until she had him on his back.
I'm supposed to be cleaning your house, earning my pay, not getting naked with you in this gorgeous old bed.
You can call me Mr. Landon if that helps ease your conscience.
Her laugh was warm against his skin.
I think my conscience can be flexible in this case.
So was she, he thought. Flexible. Those long arms, long legs, the long torso, all so smooth and fluid as she moved over him, as all that wild hair feathered over his skin. Muscles he'd begun to recognize again, bunched and tensed as she glided her lips over him, as her skilled hands pressed, kneaded, stroked, rousing, soothing, seducing the already seduced. Naked in bed. That's how he wanted her. He peeled the snug, stretchy pants over her hips, down her legs, exploring her inch by inch, all the way to her ankles, and up again over the taut curve of calf, the delicate back of her knee, along the firm length of her thigh to that hot, damp core. She arched, a hand digging into the sheet, fisting there as pleasure struck and quivered, and it built, 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 until she broke, until she cartwheeled into the tumble of sensations. She levered up, dragging him to her, latching her arms around him when they knelt body to body on the bed. Heat flooded her, sent even her blood to sizzling under her skin as the breeze whipped in the open doors to flow over them. It danced through her hair, he thought, and the sun streamed over her like molten gold. They might have been on some lost island with the relentless voice of the sea, the tang of it on the air, the mocking laugh of gulls winging across the blue bowl of sky. Now those limbs wrapped around him, demand, invitation, plea. He took what she offered, gave what she asked. His body plunged to hers while lips met in unsated appetite. Faster, stronger, with her head flung back and his mouth on her throat where her pulse beat in mad time. Then she cried out his name, just his name, and he felt even his slippery hold on control snap loose. He lay face down, she face up, and both struggled for breath. With her eyes closed, Abra slid her hand over, found his arm, trailed down until she could link fingers with him.
Oh, that was a hell of an afternoon break.
My new favorite kind,
he mumbled, his voice muffled against the mattress.
I really have to get up and get back to work.
Let me write an excuse note to your boss.
She won't buy it. She's really strict.
Now he turned his head and studied her profile with sleepy eyes.
No, she's not.
You don't work for her.
She curled toward him now.
She can be a total bitch.
I'm gonna tell her you said that.
Better not. She might fire me. Then who'd clean the house?
Well, that's a point.
He draped an arm around her.
I'll help you deal with the rest of the house.
She started to decline, quickly and gently. She had a routine, and he'd be in her way. But she let it go, for now.
Why aren't you doing your own work?
I'm taking the rest of the day off.
Dog love?
No.
He trailed his fingers through her hair before he sat up.
I have enough finished and polished up to send to my agent. So I did.
That's great!
She popped up beside him.
Isn't it?
I guess I'll find out in the next few days.
Let me read it.
When he shook his head, she rolled her eyes.
Okay, I get that, more or less. How about letting me read one scene? Just one? A page?
Maybe later. Evade now, he thought, as she had a sneaky way of talking him into things, like a dog. I'll ply you with wine first, so you're mildly impaired.
I can't get mildly impaired tonight. I have a yoga class at home.
Sometime. Later. I'll help you get some of the stuff the cops jumbled up put back.
Okay. You can strip the bed. That's basic.
Even as she rolled out of it, the dog let out a trio of warning barks.
Perfect.
Eli muttered, grabbed his pants. He heard the dog charge down the steps, barking like a hound out of hell.
You win that one, he dragged on his shirt. And you're naked.
I'll take care of that.
Too bad. Naked housekeeping might have been fun.
She grinned as he hurried out, as he called to the dog.
Eli Landon, she thought, was coming back strong.
Downstairs, he ordered the dog to stop. She surprised him by doing just that, but sitting right by his side as he opened the door. He tried to block that first automatic strike of panic when he saw cops. Pushed back against the dark cloud that habitually followed.
Not Wolf, at least, he thought.
Detective Corbett, Vinny.
Nice dog,
Corbett began.
Hey, is that Barbie?
When the dog immediately reacted with a greeting woof and wagging tail, Vinny bent down to pet her.
You've got Barbie, Mr. Bridle's dog. He died in his sleep a couple weeks ago. The neighbor came to check on him, as she did most days, and found Barbie here guarding the bed. Oh, she's a good dog, she is.
As if remembering himself, Vinny straightened.
Sorry. I'm just glad to see her in a good home. She's a great dog.
Pretty girl,
Corbett commented.
Do you have a few minutes, Mr. Landon?
I get that question from cops a lot.
But he stepped back to let them in.
Deputy Hansen told me about the latest break-in, so I asked him to come with me to speak to you. Have you had a chance to go through the house thoroughly, check for anything missing or out of place?
Things were already out of place from the search. We've been putting it back together, and so far I haven't found anything missing. He's not a thief, not in the classic sense, anyway.
I have your statement from last night, but I wonder if you could go over your activities yesterday evening for me.
Corbett looked up as Abra, fully dressed, walked downstairs with a laundry basket.
Ms. Walsh?
Detective. Hi, Vinny. Cleaning day. Can I get you coffee? A cold drink?
No, but thanks.
Corbett shifted his stance.
You were with Mr. Landon when the break-in was discovered?
That's right. I work at the village pub on most Friday nights. Eli came up, when was that? 9:30 or so, I guess. He and Stoney Trivet hung out at the bar, swapping lies.
Stoney's a local character,
Vinny explained. We stayed till closing, Eli continued,
Abra and I walk Stoney home, then walk back here.
Deputy Hansen logged your call to him at 1:43.
That's right. We went into the kitchen, and I saw the alarm pad smudged, then checked the door and found fresh Jimmy marks. And, yeah, I've changed the code. Again.
And added backup,
Abra said, giving Barbie a rub.
Did you see any cars you didn't recognize? Anyone, either on the beach or on the street?
No, but then I wasn't looking for any. I'd been outside earlier, doing some research, reading on the back terrace. I didn't notice anything or anyone. I hadn't planned on going to the bar. I didn't tell anyone I was going. It was impulse.
Do you tend to go in on Friday nights?
I've only been in there once before.
Did you see anyone in the bar who struck you in any way? Anyone who seemed to be acting unusual?
No.
I'm going to put this load in,
Abra began. She took two steps away, turned back.
Tonic and lime.
I'm sorry?
It's nothing. I'm sure it's nothing, but I did serve a table of one, a man I didn't recognize. He sat in the back, alone, drank tonic and lime. He ordered three, but he didn't stay for the third.
Why unusual?
Corbett asked her.
Most people who come in come with friends, or to see them, or if they're just passing through, they'd likely have a beer or a glass of wine. Still, maybe he just doesn't drink, and he just wanted to hear the band. They're good. But...
Go on,
Corbett prompted.
It's just that, now that I'm playing it back, he left right after Eli came in. I'd taken his order, added it to the others, and gone to the bar to put it in. I stood there a couple minutes, if that, talking to Stoney. I was facing the main door, so I saw Eli come in. I introduced them, then picked up my orders, and when I went back, I saw he'd gone, and just left money on the table.
I know the bar.
Corbett's eyes narrowed as he thought of it.
Well, there's another exit, but you have to go through the kitchen.
That's right. I don't think I'd have seen him leave if he left after Eli came in, because I'd shifted, you know, so I wasn't facing the door. Unless he went through the kitchen, he left between the time Eli got there and I went to take him his drink. Either way, he left about 5 minutes after he ordered the tonic.
Do you remember what he looked like?
God, in vague terms. White, late 30s, I think. Brown hair, or dark blonde, and the light's dim in there. And longish, over the collar. I couldn't tell you his eye color. I don't really know his build as he was sitting. He had wide hands. I might remember more if I just clear my mind.
Will you work with a police artist?
Well, yes, but do you really think that could be the man who broke in here?
It's worth pursuing.
I'm sorry.
She looked from Eli to Vinny.
I didn't think of it last night.
That's why we do follow-ups,
Vinny told her.
Oh, I don't know how much help I'll be. You know the lighting in there, especially when they have music. And he was sitting in a back corner where it's darker yet.
What did he say to you? Talk about?
Corbett asked.
Not much. Tonic and lime. I asked him if he was meeting anyone, because chairs get to be a premium on the weekends. He just repeated the order, not the friendly sort.
We'll arrange the artist when it's a good time for you. We'll be in touch.
Since Barbie was sniffing at his shoes, Corbett leaned down to rub her head.
Oh, and the dog's a good idea. A big dog barking inside a house makes a lot of B&E men think twice.
When Eli let them out, Abra stood there, the basket of laundry on her hip.
I'm sorry, Eli.
For what?
If I'd remember that guy last night, we might already have a sketch. And I'm already sorry because I don't know how well I can describe him. I really didn't pay close attention to his face after it was clear he wanted to be left alone.
We don't even know if he has any part in this. And if he does, however vaguely you remember, it's more than we had.
I'm going to meditate later, see if I can clear things out, pull it back.
And don't diss meditation.
I didn't say a word.
You thought several. I'm going to put this laundry in.
She checked the time.
I'm definitely behind schedule. I'll just take some time tomorrow to do the bedrooms I didn't get to today. I'll finish your grandmother's and get what I can get done by 5. I have things to do at home before class.
Will you come back after class?
I really have things I've neglected, and I'm going to want my own empty house, without your doubting vibes, to meditate. Plus, you and Barbie need to finish bonding. I'll be back tomorrow.
Gotta get this load in, she repeated and hurried off.
Just you and me, Barbie,
Eli told her.
Probably for the best. He was getting just a little too used to having Abra there. Probably better for both of them to have some time, some space. But it didn't really feel better.
18. Blocked, Abra decided. She was blocked. That had to be the answer. She'd meditated, worked with the police artist, tried active dreaming, which she wasn't very good at, and still the time, effort, and skill of the artist produced a sketch that could be nearly any man between 30 and 40. Any man, she thought, studying her copy of the sketch yet again, with a thin face, long, somewhat shaggy, medium brown hair, and thin lips. She couldn't swear to the lips, if it came to that. Had they really been thin, or had she projected thin lips because he'd struck her as such a tight ass? So much for her powers of observation, she decided in disgust, which she'd considered above average before this. Of course, there wasn't any proof her tight-ass tonic-and-lime-drinking customer had anything to do with anything. But still, nothing to be done about it, at least until after the holiday weekend. She added the last little silver ball to finish the pair of citrine and silver dangle earrings. As she filled out the description card, she imagined Eli's family already on their way. That was one good thing. Another, the house hit family holiday perfectly on her scale. At least fussing with that had taken her mind off her pitiful failure with the artist. She wanted progress as she took off the glasses she wore for close-up work and reading. She admitted she'd hoped to play a part in identifying the intruder and potential murderer, in helping Eli resolve his problems, with the little rush of solving a mystery. She wanted to make it all neat and tidy when she knew, absolutely, life was anything but. Now she couldn't shake off the nagging sense of annoyance and the underlying sense of unease. At least her new jewelry stock turned out well, if she did say so herself, but her hope that the creative energy would unblock the block fell short. She straightened up her work table in her tiny second bedroom, put her tools and supplies away in their labeled bins. She'd take the new stock into the gift shop and maybe buy herself a little something with the profits. She opted to walk, to give herself a chance to admire the play of daffodils and hyacinths cheerfully showing off their blooms, the colorful Easter eggs dangling from tree branches, the bright pop of forsythia. She always loved the birth of a new season, whether it was the first spear of green in spring or the first drift of snow in winter. But today, anxiety plagued her, so she wished she'd stopped at Maureen's, talked her friend into going into the village with her. It was stupid to feel she was being watched, just a residual reaction to what had happened at Bluff House. And the lighthouse, she thought as she turned to study its sturdy white lance. No one was following her, though she couldn't resist a look over her shoulder, or the rising chill up her spine. She knew these houses, knew most of the people in them, or who owned them. She passed Surfside Bed and Breakfast, fought off a dragging dread and a sudden urge to turn around, run back home. She wouldn't be chased away by her own silly thoughts, wouldn't deny herself the pleasure of her walks in the place she'd made her home. And she wouldn't think of being grabbed from behind in a dark, empty house. The sun shone, birds called, holiday traffic chugged by. But she let out a relieved breath when she entered the main village with its shops and restaurants and people. It pleased her to see customers milling around the window of the gift shop, tourists taking their holiday at the beach, families like Eli spending the weekend. She started to go inside, then saw Heather behind the counter. She stepped back, started to walk on.
Crap, she muttered. Just crap.
She hadn't seen the shop clerk since Heather had run out of yoga class in tears. Heather hadn't made the in-home practice, nor the next one on her schedule. And inside, Abra harbored enough anger and resentment to prevent her from calling to check.
Negative energy,
she told herself, and stopped. Time to expel it, rebalance her chi, and maybe she'd break that block after all. In any case, Heather was who she was. There was no point in hoarding bad feelings on either side. She made herself walk back, step inside. Good smells, pretty light, the strong sense of local arts and crafts. Take that mood, she ordered herself, and go with it. She waved casually to the other clerk, noted the woman's slight wince as she continued to wait on a customer. No doubt Heather had unloaded her perceived slights on her co-workers. Who could blame her, really? Deliberately, Abra made her way back to Heather, waited patiently as she was studiously ignored. When Heather finished ringing up a sale, Abra stepped forward.
Hi, busy today. I just need 5 minutes. I can wait until you have it.
I really can't say when that might be. We have customers.
Stiff, jaw tight, Heather skirted around the counter and clipped her way to a trio of women. Temper rose up high enough to actually tickle the base of Abra's throat. She breathed it down again, then impulsively picked up a set of hand-blown wine glasses she'd admired for weeks but couldn't really afford.
Excuse me.
With a smile plastered on her face, Abra took the glasses over to Heather.
Could you ring me up? I just love these. Aren't they great?
She said to the other women, and got admiring assents, even as one of them shifted to pick up a set of champagne flutes by the same artist.
These would make a wonderful wedding gift.
Wouldn't they?
All smiles. Abra turned one of her glasses in the light.
I just love the braided stems. You can't go wrong with anything in buried treasures,
Abra added, beaming toward Heather as she held out the glasses.
Of course. If you have any questions, just ask,
Heather said to the shoppers, then walked back to the counter.
Now I'm a customer, Abra announced. First, we've missed you at class.
Jaw still tight, Heather got bubble wrap from under the counter, began to roll it around a glass.
I've been busy.
We've missed you,
Abra repeated, and laid a hand over Heather's.
I'm sorry we argued, and I said things that upset you and hurt your feelings.
You made it seem like I was just a busybody, and the police were there.
I know. And now they're not, because he didn't do anything. Someone broke into Bluff House twice, that we're sure of. The first time, whoever it was grabbed me.
I know. It's just another reason I'm concerned.
I appreciate your concern, but Eli's not the one who tried to hurt me. He was in Boston, and he's not the one who...
She took a quick glance around in case any of the customers were standing close enough to hear.
Who hurt the detective from Boston? Because I was with Eli when that happened. Those are facts, Heather, verified by the police.
They searched Bluff House.
To be thorough, they may search my cottage.
Yours?
Shock and genuine concern popped through.
Why? That's ridiculous. That's not right.
Barrier cracked. Abra thought when Heather's voice rang with insult.
Because there's one, just one cop in Boston who won't accept the facts and the evidence, and he's hounded Eli for a year. Now he's done some hounding in my direction.
I think that's terrible.
So do I.
But since we've got nothing to hide, let him hound. Our local police are investigating now. I have a lot more faith in them finding out what's happening and who's responsible.
We take care of our own,
Heather said with a nod of civic pride.
Just be careful. I will be.
Abra tried not to flinch when Heather rang up the glasses. Bye-bye, cute new yoga outfit. But she dug in her bag for her credit card and remembered the jewelry.
I nearly forgot. I made about a dozen pieces.
She took them out, set them on the counter, all sealed in their clear bags.
You can take a look at them when you have time. Let me know.
I will. Oh, I love these.
She held up the citrine and silver, the last pieces Abra made.
Little silver moons and stars, then the citrine's like sunlight.
Those are really nice.
A woman with the champagne flutes walked over to the counter.
Abra's one of our artists. She just brought in some new pieces.
Aren't we lucky? Oh, Joanna, come look at this necklace. It's so you.
Abra exchanged a smug look with Heather as she handed over her credit card. The way the three women huddled around the new pieces, she might justify a cute new yoga outfit after all. 30 minutes later, Abra treated herself to an ice cream cone and walked home in a much more positive state of mind. She'd sold half her new pieces on the spot, and two more from what the store already had in stock. Definitely new outfit time, and she had just the one bookmarked on her favorite site. Plus, she'd earned the gorgeous wine glasses. First chance she'd have Eli to the cottage for a little wine and candlelight dinner and use them. But now she'd try meditation again. Maybe with some incense this time. Usually she preferred the fresh sea air, but that hadn't been working. Change it up, she decided. She let herself into the house, entertained herself by unwrapping and washing her new glasses before setting them out on display on her kitchen shelves. Admiring them gave her positive outlook another boost. In anticipation, she got a pencil, a pad, the copy of the sketch, set it all by her meditation cushion in her bedroom. Though an average artist at best in her own estimation, she thought she might be able to make any changes or additions that came into her mind right then and there. Already starting her breathing, she went to the closet for the box that held her incense, cones, and sticks, and the various holders she'd collected over time. Maybe the lotus scent, she considered, to open the mind's eye. Really, she should have tried this before. She got the box off the high shelf, opened it, and with a strangled gasp, dropped it as if it held a hissing snake. Her incense rained down, the holders clattered, and the gun thudded on the floor. Instinctively, she backed away from it. Her first gut reaction was to run, then logic clicked in. Whoever had put the gun there wouldn't be waiting in the house for her to find it. They'd put it there, she thought, as she let herself breathe, so the police would find it. That meant, had to mean, whoever had held that gun last had committed murder. She went straight to the phone.
Vinny, I've got a really big problem. Can you come?
In under 10 minutes, she met him at the door.
I didn't know what else to do.
You did just right. Where is it?
In the bedroom. I didn't touch it.
She led the way, then stood back while he crouched to examine the gun.
It's a .32.
Is that the same kind that...
Yeah.
He straightened, took his phone out of his pocket, took several pictures.
You're not in uniform,
she realized.
You weren't even on duty. You were home with your family. I shouldn't...
Abs.
He turned, took her in for a hug, patting her back like a daddy.
Relax. Corbett's gonna want to know about this.
I swear it's not my gun.
I know it's not your gun. Nobody's gonna think otherwise. Relax,
he repeated.
We'll sort this out. Have you got anything cold?
Cold?
Yeah, Coke, iced tea, whatever.
Oh, sure.
I could use something cold. Maybe you could go take care of that and I'll be right out.
He'd given her a chore to calm her down, she knew. So she'd calm down. She got out a pan, added water, sugar, then set it on heat to dissolve while she juiced lemons. By the time Vinny came in, she was pouring her mix into a tall glass pitcher.
You didn't have to do all that.
I kept my hands busy.
Fresh lemonade, from scratch.
You deserve it. Tell Carla I'm sorry I interrupted your weekend.
She's married to a cop, Abra. She gets it. Corbett's on his way. He wants to see it in place.
She wanted it and the death surrounding it out of her house.
Then you'll take it away.
Then we'll take it away,
he promised.
So, go through it with me?
I went out, walked to the village, spent a little time in the gift shop. I bought an ice cream cone, came home.
As she spoke, she poured the lemonade over ice, added a plate of crispy cookies to the table.
I couldn't have been gone more than an hour and 15.
Did you lock the doors?
Yes, I've been careful, mostly careful about that since the break-ins at Bluff House.
When's the last time you looked in that box?
I don't use incense often, and I haven't bought any in a while.
I end up buying it, not using it, giving it away. And I'm rambling.
She took a drink.
I don't know exactly, but I'd say at least a couple weeks. Probably three.
You spend a lot of time out of the house. A lot of that time at Bluff House?
Yes. Classes, my cleaning jobs, shopping. For myself and for clients. Errands. And I've been spending most nights with Eli. Whoever killed Kirby Duncan planted it, Vinny, to try to implicate me.
Well, that's a pretty sure bet. I'm gonna take a look at the doors and windows, okay? Good lemonade,
he added.
Good cookies, too.
She stayed where she was rather than dogging him. Going through her cottage couldn't take long. Small scale, it boasted three bedrooms, though the second of the three hardly qualified as a storage closet and served as her craft room. Kitchen, living room, with its sunroom that had been one of its main selling points. Two small baths. No, it wouldn't take long. She rose, walked to look out on her back deck. Another selling point, that generous outdoor living space. She used it as much as the interior in good weather. Then that view, the jagged curve of the little cape with the lighthouse, the spread of sea and sky. So much what she wanted, and such a constant comfort and pleasure to her. Now someone had violated that, and her. Someone had been in her home, walked through her rooms, and left death behind. She turned when Vinny came back in, waited while he looked at the deck door, the back windows.
You've got windows unlocked back here, and a couple in the front, too.
Oh, I'm an idiot.
You're not.
I like to open the house, air it out. I'm a fiend about it.
Gripping her own hair, she tugged, because it was easier than kicking herself.
I'm surprised I thought to lock any of the windows.
Couple of threads caught here.
He took a picture with his phone.
You got tweezers?
Yes, I'll get them.
Didn't think to bring a kit,
he said when she stepped out.
I brought an evidence bag for the gun, but not much else. That should be Corbett,
he continued at the knock on the door.
You want me to get it?
No, I've got it.
Tweezers in hand, she opened the front door.
Detective Corbett, thanks for coming. Vinny, Deputy Hansen's back in the kitchen. The gun, I'll show you.
She led the way to the bedroom.
I dropped the box, everything, when I saw it inside. I was getting some incense, and it was in there.
When's the last time you opened the box?
I told Vinny probably 3 weeks ago. He took pictures.
She said when Corbett took out his camera.
Now I have my own.
He crouched, pulled out a pencil, hooked the trigger guard.
Do you own a gun, Ms. Walsh?
I don't. I've never owned a gun. I've never even held a gun. Not even a toy one, really. My mother was firmly anti-war toys, and I liked puzzles and crafts, and I'm rambling. I'm nervous. I don't like having a gun in my house.
We'll take it with us.
Corbett pulled on protective gloves as Vinny came in.
Detective, there's some unlocked windows. Abra told me she doesn't always think to lock them. I've got some fibers stuck in one of the rear ones.
Now, let's take a look at that. Who's been in the house in the last couple weeks? Oh, I have in-home yoga classes once a week in the evening. So my students. And my neighbor's kids have been over. Oh, my God. The kids. Is that loaded? Is that thing loaded?
Yeah, it's loaded.
What if one of them had come in here and... Being irrational. They wouldn't come in here and get that box off the top shelf of my closet. But if they had...
She closed her eyes.
Any repairmen in for any reason?
Corbett asked as he pulled an evidence bag from his pocket.
No.
Landlord, cable company, anything like that?
No, my class, the kids.
Eli Landon?
Her eyes flashed. Corbett simply studied her.
You told him you know he's innocent.
I still have to ask the question.
He hasn't been in the cottage in the last few weeks. He's stuck close to Bluff House since the first break-in. I had to wheedle to get him to leave the house long enough to shop for his family's visit this weekend.
Okay.
He straightened.
Let's take a look at the fibers.
She waited while they studied them, murmured over them, tweezed them out, and bagged them.
Would you like some lemonade, Detective? I just made it.
Well, that'd be nice. Then why don't you sit down?
Something about the way he said it made her palms clammy. She poured the drink, sat down at the table.
Have you seen anyone hanging around? No, and I haven't seen the man from the bar again. At least I don't think I have. I should recognize him, even though I haven't been much help with the description. It's why I went for the incense. I thought I'd light some, try more meditation. I've been edgy the last few days, and I thought I'd broken through.
Edgy?
Well, with all that's gone on, it's understandable. And...
hell with it.
Someone's watching me.
You've seen someone?
No, but I feel it. It's not my imagination, or I'm nearly positive it's not. I know what it's like to be watched now. You know what happened to me a few years ago.
Yes, I do.
And I feel it, and have for several days now.
She glanced toward the window she'd left unlocked, toward her glass-deck door and the pots of mixed flowers she'd set up in the sun.
I'm out of the house a lot, and I've been spending most nights down with Eli. And since I was careless enough not to lock the windows, it would be pitifully easy to get in here, to leave that gun here. But why? I don't understand why here. Why me? Or I do, but it's convoluted. If someone wanted to discredit me, implicate me to cast doubt on Eli's alibi, why not just plant the gun in Bluff House during the break-in?
We searched before he could plan it, or he didn't plan on giving it up, Finney said. Sorry, Detective, out of turn.
No, it's fine. The last couple days, Wolf's pushed for a search warrant for this cottage. His superiors aren't backing him on it, neither mine, but he's pushing. He claims he got an anonymous call telling him the caller saw a woman with long curly hair, walking away from the lighthouse on the night Duncan was murdered.
I see.
A canyon opened up in her belly.
You'd find the gun here, so either I killed Duncan or was an accomplice. Do I need a lawyer?
It couldn't hurt, but right now this looks like what it is, a setup. And that doesn't mean we don't go through the process.
All right.
He sampled the lemonade.
Look, Ms. Walsh, Abra, I'm going to tell you how this reads and how my boss is going to read it.
If you had anything to do with Duncan, why the hell didn't you throw that gun off the cliff, especially after we executed the search on Bluff House? Putting it in your bedroom closet with a bunch of incense, that makes you dumb as a bag of hair. And there's nothing that indicates you're dumb as a bag of hair.
Not trusting her voice yet, she nodded.
You find it, call it in. Coincidentally, the lead detective on Landon's wife's homicide gets a call from an anonymous source on a prepaid cell that pinged from a local tower, claiming 3 weeks after the incident, he saw a woman with your hair and body type walking away from the crime scene on the night in question.
And Detective Wolf believes him.
Well, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but he'd like to hook a search warrant with it. It screams setup, and a clumsy one at that, so I think Wolf's not buying it. But like I said, he wouldn't mind giving your place a look.
There's nothing here. Nothing but that gun.
Yeah, we'll go through the process. I can get a warrant for a search, but it'd be easier all around if you just gave your permission.
She didn't want it. It made her a little sick inside. But more, she wanted it over.
All right. Search, look, do whatever you have to do.
Good. When we finish, I want you to make sure this place is locked, including windows.
Yes, I will. And I think I'll spend the nights either at Bluff House or with my next-door neighbors until... for a while.
Better yet.
Do you have to tell Eli now?
She dropped her hand when she realized she'd been twisting the smoky quartz pendant she wore, one made in her craft room, around and around on its chain.
It's just his family's coming. They're probably here now for Easter. Something like this is going to upset everyone.
Until I need to talk to him again, I don't have to tell him anything.
Good.
I've called for somebody to come in and check for prints, but...
there won't be any, but it's the process.
That's right.
She got through it. Little house, she thought. Didn't take long. She stayed out of the way, stayed outside when she could. This was how Eli had felt, she realized. How he must have felt when the police came to check, to search, to look for evidence. He must have felt, for that bubble of time, the house wasn't his. His things weren't his things. Vinny stepped out.
Oh, they're finishing up. Nothing, he told her. No prints on the window, on the box, on the contents.
He gave her back a quick rub.
The search is a formality, Ebbs. You okaying it without a warrant only adds weight to this being set up.
I know.
Want me to hang out with you a while?
No, you should go home to your family. To dye Easter eggs, she thought, with his little boy. You didn't have to stay this long.
I want you to call me any time, for anything.
I will. Count on it. I'm going to put myself together a little and go down to Bluff House. I want to see Hester.
You give her my best. I can wait until you're ready to go.
No, I'm fine. Better. It's broad daylight. There are people on the beach. He's got no reason to bother me anyway at this point.
Keep the doors and windows locked anyway.
I will.
She walked him out. Her across-the-street neighbor sent her a wave, then went back to digging in his front garden. A couple of boys raced by on bikes. Too much activity, she assured herself, for anyone to try to get inside, and no reason now to do so. She got a trash bag, went into the bedroom. Kneeling, she threw everything on the floor away, box and all. She couldn't know what he'd touched. If she could, she'd have thrown everything in the closet away. Instead, she freshened up her makeup, packed a small bag, included the sketch. After she tidied up the kitchen, she retrieved the strawberry rhubarb pies she'd made, boxed them up. She carried them out to her car, went back for her bag, her purse. And when she locked her front door, her heart broke a little. She loved her little cottage, and didn't know when she'd feel safe in it again. 19. People, noise, movement filled Bluff House. Eli had forgotten what it was like to have so many voices speaking at once, so many activities rolling over each other, so many questions to answer. After the initial jolt, he found himself enjoying the company and chaos, hauling luggage upstairs or bags and platters into the kitchen, watching his niece toddle everywhere, and holding what seemed to be intense conversations with the dog, noting his mother's surprised approval when he pulled out a fancy tray of fruit and cheese to offer as a post-trip snack. But his biggest pleasure came from seeing his grandmother stand on the terrace, the breeze fluttering her hair as she looked out to sea. When he slipped out to join her, she leaned against him. In her beam of sun, the old dog Sadie raised her head, gave a little wag, then went back to sleep.
"Sun warms old bones," Hester said. "Mine and Sadie's. I've missed this."
"I know." He draped an arm around her shoulders. "And I think this has missed you."
"I like to think so. You potted pansies?"
"Abra did. I water them."
"Teamwork's a good thing. It's helped knowing you're here, Eli. Not just on the practical level of having someone in the house, but having you here. Because I think this has missed you, too."
The familiar vine of guilt and regret wound through him.
"I'm sorry I stayed away so long. Sorrier I thought I had to."
"Did you know I hated to sail?"
Pure shock had him gaping down at her. "You? Hester, first mate Landon? I thought you loved it."
"Your grandfather loved it. I had to take a pill to keep my stomach steady. I love the sea, but better when I'm on land, looking at it. We sailed together, Eli and I don't regret a single pill, a single minute on the water with him. Marriage is a series of compromises, and at its best the compromises create a life, a partnership. You compromised, Eli, and that's nothing to apologize for."
"I was going to take you out tomorrow," she laughed, quick and delighted.
"Let's not."
"Why do you keep the boat?" When she simply looked at him, smiled at him, he understood. For love, he thought, and pressed his lips to her cheek. She shifted to look him in the eye.
"So, you have a dog?"
"I guess I do. She needed a place. I can relate.
A dog's a healthy step.
She shifted again to study him more closely and leaned on her cane.
You look better.
I hope to hell I do. You look better, Gran.
I hope to hell I do.
She let out another laugh.
We were a couple of wounded warriors, weren't we, young Eli?
Healing up now and coming on strong. Come home, Gran. She sighed, gave his arm a squeeze before she walked with the aid of her cane to a chair to sit.
I've got more healing to do yet.
You can heal here. I'll stay with you, as long as you need. Something shimmered in her eyes. For a moment he feared tears, but it was light.
Sit, she told him. I fully intend to come back, but now's not the time. It would be both impractical and unwise to be here when I have all those damned doctors and physical therapists in Boston.
I can take you in for your appointments. He hadn't realized, not really, until he'd seen her standing on the terrace, her eyes on the sea, how much he wanted her back. We can arrange for you to have your therapy here.
God, how much your mind's like mine. I've considered exactly that almost from the moment I woke up in the hospital. Coming back's one of the main things that got me through. I come from tough stock, and marrying a Landon gave me more. I made those doctors eat crow when I recovered, when I got on my feet again.
They didn't know Hester Landon.
They know me now, she sat back. But I've got a ways to go yet. I need your mother. Oh, I need your father, too. He's a good son, and always has been. But I need Lissa, bless her, for a while longer. I'm on my feet, but I can't stay there as much as I'd like, as much as I will. So I'll stay in Boston until I'm satisfied I'm steady again, and you'll stay here.
As long as you want.
Good. Because this is exactly where I want you, and always have. I wondered if I'd be the last Landon in Bluff House, the last who'd live in Whiskey Beach. I've asked myself more than once if the reason I never warmed to Lindsay was because she'd keep you in Boston.
Gran,
well, however selfish and self-serving, it was part of the why. Not the whole, but part. I would have accepted that, or tried, if she'd made you happy, the way Trisha's family and her work at Landon Whiskey make her happy.
She's a whiz at it, isn't she?
She takes after your grandfather and your father, born and bred for it. You're more like me. Oh, we can handle business when we have to, and we're not fools, but it's art that pulls us.
Reaching over, she patted his hand.
Even when you turned your sights on the law, it was your writing that made you happiest.
That seemed like too much fun to be a job. And now that it's a job, it's a lot more work. When I practiced law, it felt as if I had something important, something solid, more than daydreaming on paper.
Is that all there is to it? Daydreaming?
No. Lindsay used to call it that. He'd nearly forgotten. Not harshly, but a handful of short stories wasn't all that impressive.
She preferred the impressive, and I don't say that harshly. She was who she was. But in that series of compromises, the plain truth is Lindsay rarely pulled her weight. Or not that I could see. People who say not to speak ill of the dead just don't have the spine to say what they think.
You've got plenty of spine. He hadn't expected to talk of Lindsay, not here, not with his grandmother. But maybe this was the place to put some of it to rest. It wasn't all her fault.
It's rarely only one person's fault.
I thought we'd take our own steps, meld our strengths, weaknesses, goals. But I married a princess. Her father always called her that. Princess.
Ah, yes, I recall that now.
She always got what she wanted. She was raised to believe she could and would and should. She was naturally charming, incredibly beautiful, and absolutely believed her life would be perfect.